part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
I am here with my good friend Jay Holtham.
Hello,
who is back on the podcast. And my name is Christian Horn. And this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And it is the first day of October.
Woohoo!
Which, you know what that means, right? That means we have to talk horror movies.
Yes.
And so the attempt is going to be because with this crew, who knows how things are going to work out, but the attempt is going to be to do one horror movie per week, and a different part-time fanboy will pick one of their favorites or just a horror movie that they wanted to talk about. And Jay is the guest of honor this week, the part-time fanboy of the week, and he has chosen because we know how this is gonna go. We're giggling
looking forward to this all weekend.
Really? Jay picked John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
That's right.
The cult favorite movie, which, yes, there's a reason for that in my opinion. Why don't we talk about because when we did this. When I came up with the idea for this, you were very much like, I want to do something by John Carpenter, but there was, there were like three movies. There was like The Thing, I think Mouth of Madness, and Prince of Darkness. And I did not want to influence anybody's choices, you know, who's doing it. And I
was whose fault is that?
Totally my fault. And there was a part of me was like, please don't pick Prince of Darkness. Please don't pick Prince of Darkness. And you picked Prince of Darkness, which is fine. I mean, I had seen it a long time ago. And if anyone can discern who is listening, it is not my favorite of John Carpenter's films, but you are the guest, and the guest gets the choice, and the guest gets to choose. So why did you pick this particular one over The Thing and Mouth of Madness?
Well, I want to say, and it's a weird thing that happened when I picked those three movies. I've looked it up. They are grouped together as a trilogy by John Carpenter. They're his Apocalypse trilogy, which I didn't realize because there's nothing trilogy-ish about these movies.
No.
At all. They are wildly different in subject matter. I guess the only thing that sort of the thing that links them together is that they're all sort of about the end of the world. And all sort of downbeat bummer endings. This movie is one of those things that like has a real deep hold on me. And I don't know.
That's interesting. When did you first see it?
I must have seen it right around the time it came out. I mean, I don't know that I saw it in the theater. I think I was a little too young for that.
Yeah, it's like 87, I think. Yeah, 87.
So I would have been 14? Yeah, I would have been 14, so a little young.
Yeah.
So I probably saw it in 88 or 89 on video. Probably gotten from Video Junction in
Leonia, New Jersey. That's awesome.
Video Junction, man, that place. I realized recently that place completely changed my life in ways that I really need to like honor and respect.
Yes.
Big props to Video Junction. But I feel like I saw commercials for this, and it's the kind of thing that like got into my brain in a way that the movie is weird. It does not actually make a lot of sense, though it sort of tries to make sense.
Yes.
It makes perfect sense, but it also doesn't make sense at all.
Perfect sense, but okay, I'll go with you. Go ahead with your train of thought.
It makes sense, but it is also like weird and impressionistic, and it's one of those weird John Carpenter movies that is almost sort of like snippets of things and these disjointed images that don't really add up, that he doesn't ever really explain in any linear sort of way. and is really sort of like a tone poem of a movie in its weirdness. So it like, I don't know, I feel like I saw it when I was like 14 or 15 and it didn't make any sense then, but it just, the image is stuck in my head. There's one image, like, and it's only in the movie for like literally a second, but I feel like it was figured prominently in like the trailer or something, of this like half shear that Alice Cooper's crazy schizo character uses to kill a guy once. And it felt like that was, I don't know, I feel like that image haunted me for years.
Wasn't it a bicycle, like a frame of a bicycle?
Well, first he uses the bicycle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which bicycle. Is a very unique kill. Like, I was like, oh, they put some thought into that. I was like, how did they? Yeah.
Yeah, but then when he comes at the guy who's just standing in the parking lot surrounded by the crazy people.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He comes at him with like, it's like half of a garden shear.
Yeah.
And it has this like, has the look of sort of like a ceremonial curved knife. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's just something about that and something about the swirling tube of green goo and the like awesome Twilight Zone ending that this movie is one of those that like really got to me. And revisiting it, I was like, oh man, oh, they don't make them like this anymore.
Oh, good. Thank God they don't. No, you know, the thing.
It makes me sad.
What's that?
It makes me sad that they don't.
Well, you know, I agree with you that they don't make them like this anymore, in that there aren't any sort of like, you don't go to the movies to see those sort of like middle level, low budget, you know,
right?
Fun sort of like movies anymore. Like there was a time, now it's either they're either like 100 million and up budget, or it's like 2 million and below. Like there's like no, you know, and apparently this was made for like $3 million or something like that. And shot for like 30 days, which kind of shows, yes, in my opinion. I mean, I think it's beautifully shot. I think
it's
so
beautifully shot.
A lot,
right?
Of really good composition stuff in there. It's just, you know, the story is like all over the place, and there are big chunks of editing where I'm just like, what? What just happened? Like, where serious beats of story are like in the wrong place in the movie. Okay. Like, there's specifically, and we haven't even jumped to the plot yet, but there's specifically one moment where, okay, well, we have to talk about the plot before I talk about this.
Yeah, you have to talk about the plot.
So basically, you may need to explain this more than I do. So the one half of Simon and Simon is basically he is a physics student, right?
That's what he is. They study theoretical physics.
Yeah.
With Victor Wong, Professor Birak. I'll talk about the cast in a second after we get through with this, because it's just delightful. But yeah, so
it's
he studied
cast.
Victor
Wong.
As well as Dennis Dunn, and a couple of other randos, in a small, I mean, that's, they're just like random actors of the 80s.
Sure, sure.
That you saw in many episodes of Magnum PI.
Yeah. Well, there's a really, some of them are from his regular stable. They become
That's what I was going to say, is that, like, this movie is full of, like, John Carpenter, like, repertory character, repertory actors, which is lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And makes me so happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yes, so they're these students, and the professor is approached by a character entertainingly named Priest. He didn't bother to give him an actual name, played by Donald Passant, who has discovered a tube of swirling green goo underneath an abandoned church in Los Angeles, in an abandoned room where somehow candles are always burning.
Yes.
We're not going to ask that question. Why are there like 500 candles? Not just a couple. There's like 500 candles. This room was being guarded by a priest who passes away. It's apparently like a big secret within the Catholic Church.
Yes.
About this thing that has been there for centuries.
In Los Angeles, downtown LA.
Yes, it has somehow traveled from the Middle East to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Again, okay.
Perfect place for it.
And it's giving off sort of all this energy. And so the priest, who's done a series of sort of like faith and science lectures with this theoretical physicist, invites the physicist and a bunch of other rando scientists and technicians to study this thing.
Yes.
And it then proceeds to make some of them into zombies.
Yes.
And impregnate one of them.
Yes. Sort of weirdly. Yeah, yeah.
Weirdly, it's all super weird. And it turns out the thing in the tube is Satan.
Yes.
Been locked away in this tube. It's sort of implied by Jesus, but maybe it was before Jesus. It's a little unclear about the history part.
Well, okay. At one point, a woman says that she carbon dated the thing, and she's like, it's like 7 million years old. And and that's at that point, like, you know, I was really like, oh, come on, really?
Yeah, they, they carbon dated it in like half an hour. And so, yeah, so it's this ancient thing that Jesus came to. Actually, you're right. It was older than that. It, like, crash-landed here on Earth. Jesus
alien origins. Earth, yeah.
An extraterrestrial came to Earth to warn us about it. We didn't listen. We killed him. The church secreted it away and hid it in Los Angeles. And now it's coming alive. And it turns out that Satan is more like the Antichrist of sort of traditional horror movies.
He's like the Anti-Monitor in Crisis of Infinite Earths. He's like from a parallel antimatter dimension.
Exactly. And he's trying to bring his dad. Well, but Satan is, it's no longer like, usually like the Antichrist is the son of Satan. But in this, Satan is the son of the like anti-God.
Yes,
who
yes.
Is this powerful force of evil trapped away in this alternate dimension that turns out to be through mirrors. And Satan is trying to bring his dad through the mirror. And at the point where he almost does, one of the scientist girls grabs the woman who's been possessed by Satan. They fall into the mirror. The mirror is shattered. They're locked away. But, dun-dun-dun, they've been getting these, like, trippy dreams. Oh, we're going to fall asleep, gets this trippy dream.
Oh, I'm getting a headache just thinking about
this. It all really tracks. This trippy dream that is a broadcast being sent back in time from the faraway year of 1999, when apparently is the beginning of the apocalypse, starting in this church in Los Angeles. And through most of the movie, when people have this vision of this future, the figure coming out through the door is this sort of monstrous but male, looming, shadowy figure.
Yeah.
But in the end, the guy from Simon & Simon has the dream, and he sees his girlfriend, the one who fell into the mirror, coming out looking super evil.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up and then goes to touch a mirror, and then we go to black, not knowing whether or not he unleashed the Antichrist into the world.
Great ending.
It's so great. It's so good.
Almost 2 hours before the ending that I really have a problem with for a lot of it.
2 hours.
It's like an hour and 47 minutes. And I was literally like, this didn't need to be this long. Like the thing of it is, it's so funny because you're describing the plot and I'm watching it, and it's very 80s sort of. It's very 80s sort of the beginning of understanding of like physics and new age science there's a really a lot of like sort of like typical terms that you use. I can't even pull them out of you know where they're talking about tachyons
They throw in tachyons, like that whole thing of like there's a lot of talk about quantum physics.
Yes.
And Schrodinger's cat makes an appearance, and there's all of this stuff about the like the intention, and I think it sort of gets there, but it's clumsy. The intention is to be there. The reason these two, well, not two groups, because it's really just one priest and a bunch of scientists, but the reason they're all here is that they're like this overlap between what we know science, what we know about science, and what we know from faith and religion. Because, you know, it's this tube that's caught in this like other state of matter that's neither here nor there until, you know, it starts spewing liquid at people and turning them into zombies.
Slurpee gone wrong, in my opinion, like a lime Slurpee, an evil lime Slurpee in a giant container that's 7 million years old. No, I mean, and that's sort of the thing, like, okay, so let me just say that Prince of Darkness, I believe that this is sort of the beginning of John Carpenter's, or not beginning, but it's sort of like Yeah, the beginning of John Carpenter's slow slide to oblivion. Like, this movie is sort of like, I mean, he sort of, for me, I mean, it's interesting. I'm looking at the list of his credits, and it's like The Thing. For me, he kind of peaks at The Thing. Christine, yeah. Starman, Big Trouble in Little China. I think Prince of Darkness is really when things start. I mean, They Live is a great movie, but it's very campy and it's hard to take. Yeah. It's not meant to be taken seriously, I think. But I really think that, like, this is sort of the area of in time, late 80s, where John Carpenter starts to not give a crap anymore. And
I would disagree that he doesn't give a crap. I do agree that those two movies are definitively the, like, beginning of the end of John Carpenter.
Which ones? Prince of Darkness and They Live? Prince of Darkness
and They Live. That, like, whatever... But I don't think that he even started to give a crap. Let's put it this way. I think that he gave a huge amount of crap about those two movies, and no one else did. And I think
he gave a crap about They Live. I don't think he gave a crap about this movie.
I disagree. I think he gave a very big crap about this movie. I'm 100% serious. This feels to me like there is a serious and interesting movie made with love and care in there somewhere that just didn't gel.
I will agree with you. So here's the thing. There's a lot of good things that I liked in this movie, and particularly like with concept and thought and ideas and sort of where you're going to go. But it really is like this giant like goulash of ideas that, like you just said, it doesn't mix. It's just not. It's like the dinner I just made tonight for my family. I screwed up dinner. I messed it up. It was terrible. But my family ate it because they love me. But my point is that, you know, I was like, this is not good. I guess we're going to eat it. But my point is like, I understand what you're saying. And there is a big thing in it for me, which watching the beginning of the movie and getting the basic textbook thing of physics that, you know, any basic comic book reader at the time had read. I really feel like it's John Carpenter trying to do sort of like an EC comic almost, like a 50s. Yeah. And it just plays that way so broadly, and it's just, there's no focus to it. It reminds me very much of like Halloween 3, which I love. I love Halloween 3. It's not a great movie, but the thing is, it's very sort of, for lack of a better term, it's very comic booky. It is very sort of like, hey, I sort of researched this stuff, but not really. I'm just kind of throwing it in there because it sounds kind of funky and interesting, and I just started learning about this stuff, and it's really fascinating, but I just kind of just, you know, am putting it in there to sort of make it seem like cosmic or smart or whatever, but there's no real general understanding. There's no real concrete thing of like physics or faith. It's not like when you watch The Exorcist, you feel like that guy really deep dove into, you know, what was going on with religion or, you know, certain things. And I just really feel like it's funny. There's like a lot of like I love the Tachyon thing from the future thing. I was like, oh, but then they're like, oh, they're broadcasting video into our dreams and into our brain. And I was like, man, holy cow. Like, you had me there for a second. And then, it's interesting. They start off with a good concept and it's like, they don't know when to pull back. Like, you know, and at that point, you know, it's funny because we're comic book fans, and you know, the big joke for me is like, oh, you know, we're complaining about a movie with a guy who gets angry and turns green and throws tanks around. But at some point, your willing suspension of disbelief just goes like, come on. Or the explanation for things becomes like such nonsensical gobbledygook, which I feel like this movie is like full of, and you're just like, oh, please stop. You know, at some point it feels like a little bit, and I don't think he was doing this. I just feel like it starts to feel like an insult to your intelligence. You know what I mean?
I know. I totally know what you mean. And what I'm saying is, I think that's the thing about it that I love in a way, because I feel like there's a sort of like, his eyes were bigger than his stomach aspect.
Sure.
In that, I completely agree that he was trying to do an EC comic. There's a bunch of stuff like the twist ending. All of that feels to me like very Twilight Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
That like there's a shorter version of this that would be like a really great hour-long Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of like creepy and weird and kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of and I just feel like there's a bunch of stuff that he was trying to do that just doesn't quite work together in terms of tone. Dennis Dunn, who I actually really love his performance in this. He's the guy from Big Trouble in Little China. And he plays like the sort of stereotypical 80s guy, scientist in this, where he's really only concerned about money. Interesting in this way. And it's such a like, but he feels like he's in a very different movie than everyone else. Because he's playing it a little broader and a little more like, I'm in a horror movie. But, you know, like Donald Pleasance is like, I'm in freaking a Bergman movie about a priest faking his faith.
Wait, Donald Pleasance or Donald Pleasance? Yeah. Did you just
Donald Pleasance?
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Donald Pleasance.
I always thought it was Donald Pleasance.
I always thought it was Donald Pleasance. Okay. I mean,
whatever. But you're totally right that his earnestness is like really. Yes. He does that in all his movies. I mean, straight from Halloween, it's like you know.
So,
captured this boy. He's evil. You know, it's just like, what?
And it's just, he's walking around like really wrestling with a priest, dealing with the church has hidden this evil, and I'm now facing, looking into the face of evil.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. There's something about it. I fall in love with it for the attempt, and I feel like if John Carpenter had not sort of slid into unfortunate mediocrity, and if you're listening to this somehow, John, I love you. You are like
absolutely
the basis of my personality, but the last few movies have not been good. Like, if he had not and was like able to go back to this with sort of like one modern, much better special effects and sort of a slightly more modern storytelling take on it, I think this could be a really, like, all of these same things could be in there, and it could be really fucking great.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't even think it's the effects, man. I mean, I really appreciated all the practical stuff and all that stuff. Like, I mean, you take into the time that it was made. I mean, I think it's, like we've said, I mean, I think the cinematography looks good. There's a lot of really good things, but it just doesn't know what it wants to be. Are we a zombie movie? Is this a devil invasion movie? Is this The Exorcist? Like, what are we doing here? And quite honestly, there's so many story beats that play out just so like it's really interesting. You know, there's one moment where is Jameson Parker? No, which one's the guy from Simon and Simon? Is that
Jameson Parker?
Oh, is that really him or is this a different guy? I'm looking at Jameson Parker. Okay, Jameson Parker. He goes up to Victor Wong and he's kind of like, what are we doing here? Like, what is going on? Like these weird readings. And it's sort of like after the 20-minute mark, and I'm like, oh, my God, we haven't established what we're doing here yet? That's kind of like what was driving me crazy, is that you've got, like, this group of – well, they're all students, first of all, right?
They're mostly students, yes.
Yeah, and Victor Wong
– professors.
Is their professor, and he basically says, like, before the weekend starts, we're going to do this project, and you have to do it because it's going to affect your grade, and he's basically forcing his students to come down to this church and analyze something. They don't know what it is. So as the weekend goes on, they start to discover that it's like this really weird, you know, they're scientists and this really weird thing to study a canister. They don't know what the canister is at first. But then obviously, like, there's this scene where Jameson Parker goes up to Victor Wong and he says, like, I'm getting all these weird reads. And Victor Wong says something like, well, the thing is that in our world, there are things beyond our understanding. And if we voice them, it's some weird, like, really, so like weird, lame line of dialogue that really doesn't make sense. And he shows them the sheet, and I think on it is like a quote from scripture or something. And at that point, that's when Jameson Parker's character is like, wait, what? And there's no real scene following up to that where there's a justification for this. Like, no one really goes like, come on, really? And they sort of like build up to that point a little later where they're like, oh, we're all going to have a meeting. But in my mind, you get that quote and you turn around to the other students and you go, guys, this is what I've just been presented with. We're having this meeting now. Like, you know what I mean? There's just so many. It seems like, first of all, I think the movie is very slow. I think it's very ponderous.
It's extremely extremely slow.
The only thing that really keeps it captivating continually is Carpenter's music. You know, he has this beat that's like dun, 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 and it continues to go through the movie. I mean, it's really interesting. It really shows you how important sound is to a movie, which is one thing that I've always said, like music, sound, score. I think people really underestimate. But in this movie, it is the only thing really keeping the tension going, because there's sort of like a constant synth beat going on during the whole movie, kind of like driving you a little crazy a little bit. But I think that's very much it. But the thing is like, then, and earlier on in the movie, like I was trying to say earlier, Donald Pleasance or Pleasance or whatever, Priest, there's this literally a scene where he says, like, he's been trapped in there for millions of years. I can feel his presence. And all the students are surrounding him, and they're surrounding him like they know what he's talking about. And I'm like, wait, nobody has talked to these students about what this is. The only reason I know is because I've seen this movie before. And then later on comes that scene with Jameson Parker and Victor Wong, and then the students decide later, even after that, later 15 minutes after that, that they're all going to get together and have a meeting like at midnight or something. Why they're waiting till midnight, I have no idea. But it's just like, it's that scene is so oddly placed, because it's like sticks out like a sore thumb. And I'm like, wait a minute, did you literally just take a scene that was supposed to be like in the hour mark or hour and 15 minute mark and stick it in the like 15 minute mark? Like, it's just so badly arranged in places.
It's so weirdly paced. And like, there's all this like weird stuff. Like the woman who gets, the thing that really jumped out at me, the woman who gets possessed in the end, or in the middle or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, early on in the movie, we don't see it. We have no idea why it's her. She just walks into a room and is like, oh, I've got this bruise on my arm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's like, I don't, and it's like, we're like, huh? And then it slowly turns out to be this like mark of Satan that marks her, but we don't know why.
Exactly.
And I don't know. There's something, I agree with everything you're saying. It's just that like, there's something about it that I still find so like weird and charming. And there's such so many other things that I like about it. Because you're right, because there's a part of it that's like a zombie movie. Mm-hmm. There's a part of it that's sort of like a locked-in movie, because they're surrounded by this like army of street people who are drawn by the evil and let them leave.
Yeah.
And then they sort of turn on each other, and then they're like separated from each other in all of these rooms. And it just people make these weird intuitive leaps, and all of the exposition is like half of any line of exposition or any scene of exposition is delivered off camera, and we just sort of like come into the middle of things. And there's a part of me that's like, this is, I'm just sort of like, let's piece this together here and try to sort of pull this together.
But
like,
Jay, okay. it's like it's so funny, because it's not even the exposition is happening off camera. It's like half scenes. It's like really weird. It's like you almost feel like they shot like a whole scene and then he cut out the first half, and it's like, wait, what just happened? Like, there's
but it coming together. But I also have to be careful. I also have to be fair. I've seen this movie a lot. I did just watch it again. And when I watch it again, it was maybe my fourth or fifth time through it. Uh-huh. It's been a couple of years. So I'm sure there are things that I've like, oh, wait, okay. That's what those people are talking about that make more sense on like a repeated viewing.
Sure, sure.
If I'd just shown up to watch this on a Saturday night in 1987, I probably would have been like, the fuck was that?
I mean, the thing is like, it's so weird, because I was watching it with my wife, and she's like, oh yeah, I have seen this before. And then she was like, she's like, oh my God, what is going on? And I literally, 20 minutes towards the ending, I paused it and I was like, wow, how much longer do we have? Okay, 20 minutes left. I can do it. Like, I don't know that the first time I saw it, that I even watched it all the way through. I may have become so bored with it at one point that I don't think I ever saw like that fantastic ending or the way that the whole thing plays out. Because the thing is like, it is very ponderous, and it really plays upon, like, if you're not a sci-fi nerd or a comic book nerd, I really feel like if an average person was watching this, which, you know, is that really fair to say? Because does an average person go see a horror movie like this? I mean, I don't know, you know.
I don't know. Certainly not anymore.
But my point is that there's so much that just leans on being a nerd, knowing what the sort of thing that he's talking about is, that yeah. it's such a fail in some ways, because honestly, there were so many things that I was just like, what? I understand what you're talking about, but I understand what you're talking about because I've read comic books my whole life. You know what I mean? I've read science fiction my whole life. It's like he's playing to a certain kind of audience, which I can appreciate in a way, but there's so many, I mean, there are so many half scenes. And what else is really funny is that I don't believe that there's any real chemistry between the two romantic leads. Like, it's creepy.
There's literally zero chemistry.
They
do have a really gorgeous scene. Like in terms of just like a well-written scene of great dialogue, they have that one really, really great scene where they're in bed and it's, you know, a fairly sort of standard, like the guy wants to say, I love you. She stops him, but it's really nicely done. I was like, that was well-written, but they have zero chemistry. You don't feel any need. It's weird. Cause like the biggest feeling of the thing is that there are so many sort of like characters who sort of flit in and out.
Yeah.
And we kind of learn a little bit about who they are, but not a lot. And then relatively early, they start dying or becoming zombies, and we don't really care. In a way, like, the only character I really cared about was Dennis Dunn's character, because that guy had, like, a point of view about things.
Yeah, but I thought he was terrible. His delivery was terrible. Like, he would make jokes, and it's like, that didn't land. I don't think he was a very good actor, in my opinion. I love him in Big Trouble in Little China. I think he's much better in that.
He's not a good actor. I like the character.
Oof. It's interesting because I'm starting to think, and it's funny because you talked about, like, the sort of homeless people surrounding the building and how it's sort of like a siege movie, and it's interesting. It's very much like almost a mishmash of movies that he's done before, because you've got Assault on Precinct 13, which is a fantastic movie, and you've got The Thing, which is like everyone sort of stuck in a location and being taken over by a monster, and nobody really knows what's going on, and it's just like, and just elements of like all this other stuff that he's thrown into one movie, but he's done better in other movies, much better, significantly better.
Yeah. I mean, it still feels to me like this was a movie, and it as a movie that I love, and it's a cult movie, so it's okay to say this, it is a failure of a movie, but it still feels to me like this was a movie he set out to do something that he really gave a shit about, and he just tried to do too many things with it. You're exactly right, because it's sort of a slasher movie. It's sort of a we're locked in kind of movie. It's got the weird philosophical, let's have discussion, not so much discussions, let's talk about the place where quantum physics meets religious belief. It's got all that sort of, like, it's got a little bit of this romance, but then it's got the Twilight Zone ending and the tachyons and all of this sort of thing happening that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't, like, quite gel, partly because the actors aren't up to it. And it's not so much the effects aren't. I feel like there are things that, like, he could have done better or been more interesting about if he did it today.
Like almost everything, honestly. No, I mean, I really feel like it's just this big mishmash of a movie that if it had just been pared down a bit, could have been. I mean, it's funny because you were talking earlier about like maybe doing like a remake with better effect. Honestly, this is one of those movies where I'm like, yeah, remake it. Like, you could remake this. Like, they were talking about, or did they? They made a remake of Escape from New York, and it's like, why? That movie's like perfect the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why remake it? But this movie, like, I was seriously watching it, and I was like, man, you could make like a really awesome flick out of this if you just knew what you wanted it to be, because
exactly,
you know, there's like the liquid spraying, turning them into zombies, like that's not like sinister, and then like I don't even, oh god, like, but it's really funny. What's that?
That's the thing. I like the practical effect of it, but I feel like the practical effect of it is also what makes it look so goony, because it's so like obviously like a hose rigged to the of the thing, and it just looks so like doofy,
it's funny.
But then, But then there are, like, the creepy things, like the different reactions people have once they become zombies.
Sure.
Because there's, like, the one guy who slashes his own throat and still resurrects.
Oh, that was great.
Laughing.
Yeah.
You know, and then sort of crying. And it's just this, like, weird, painful thing that's happening to these people that, you know. And there is a really great sort of, like, consistent sense of dread. And that's partly the music. It's partly the ponderous sort of tone of it, you know, that just sort of, like, builds to this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then it doesn't build to anything, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's so many things that it's funny because that we mentioned the sort of like liquid sort of like shooting out of there. And it's funny because I was just thinking about one of my favorite horror movies of all time, which is 28 Days Later. And they sort of did that sort of thing where people are like sort of like sometimes will throw up the blood onto people and then they'll get infected. And it's interesting that. I mean, I do think that there are a lot of things in here that have obviously sort of inspired maybe other better movies or not even necessarily better movies, movies that came later. But it's just it really is such just a mishmash of stuff. And I just found myself like while I was watching it, like, where are we going with this? Like, I just felt like the first 20 minutes of it could have been hacked up and just like really made, you know, happen a lot faster. And you know, the other thing too is that what would have been interesting is if, you know, because the one thing about the Dennis Dunn character is that he is the only one who's like, oh man, I don't want to do this. But there was never any sort of, there's never that moment like which you sort of get in The Thing and you get in other movies like this where it's like, oh, we realize that there's something hunting us. There's never that moment where anyone's like, hey, where they turn on each other, where they go like, I'm behind the professor and this guy's not behind the professor. And that there's no discussion about religion or religion versus science. There's no discussion about like, wait a minute, we're scientists. And there's, you know, why are we doing this? And, you know, it's really important. There's no debates that happen between anybody that escalate the tension between characters to where you get the idea that not only are things really crappy outside, but things are going badly inside. And the other thing that you never get is this really between the characters, I never really got like this sense of realization that they were in danger. I mean, I got the sense that there's no tension running through the movie because they haven't really been built up as characters, and B, they don't really have solid relationships with each other where they just really give a crap about what happens to each other, you know, in a way. Like, the only really great reaction that I really loved was this actress, the female lead, Lisa Blount, who was also, I guess, in she's in a lot of stuff, but what's an officer and a gentleman. But she has that reaction when she sees that the blonde has been taken over right before she pushes her into the mirror. And you sort of got the sense that those two were becoming friendly. Like, that's the only time that I really got a sense of, like, when somebody saw somebody else get, like, turned into a zombie, beyond the fact that they got turned into something, which was horrifying, you never really saw anybody be like, oh man, I knew that guy for like 5 years. He helped me write my thesis. Like, you just never got any of that. And it's just like, why do I care about these people? You know, they have no relation to each other. I don't really identify with them. You haven't given me anything. And then the romantic thing is going nowhere, you know, except for that one scene sort of towards the end where the female lead, Lisa Blount, she basically says to him, like, I know you were trying to say, you know, in an offshoot of what you were saying that scene earlier, I know you were trying to say something to me and it may not seem important right now, but it is. Like, you're right. There are like little bits of really good writing, but they just get overshadowed by forgetting about everything else that's important.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's just that for me, the tone like carries some of that. In a way, and like I think that those are that's why the movie doesn't like come that doesn't really come together for all of those exact reasons. I am not disagreeing with you at all. Like, it doesn't gel. Like, we don't get enough spend enough time with these people. They don't have enough going on, and it's partly the weird pacing of it too, in that like by sort of design, people are separated from each other, so it takes them a long time to even begin to realize that things have gone awry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that they're like three or four people are already dead and or taken over before they realize anything's wrong. And then once they get to that point, then it's sort of like over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it ends really quickly.
Once they're there, then it's just like, oh, that's it. It's over. She falls through the thing and then we're done.
Yeah. They wrap it up really quickly. It seems like wrap it up, people.
But it's weirdly paced, but there's just something about it that I can't quit. I just can't quit it.
I mean, I just think it's that rare opportunity for that Dennis Dunn character to be like, hey man, something is not kosher here. I don't like this. And then the other characters would be like, oh, you just had a date. You know, like you don't want to be here. Like that's why, you know, there's just so many missed really good, in my opinion, and you know, I am not a professional writer, but really good writing opportunities that I felt like, you know, were missed and could have really fleshed this thing out in a way that where you cared. And it's just so funny because this is the same guy that made The Thing, you know?
I know.
And The Thing is like perfection.
The Thing is so good. The Thing is so, so good. Oh my God. It's so good. Oh.
I mean, it really is. It's funny because, but that's the difference is I'm looking at the credits for The Thing and I'm looking at the credits for Prince of Darkness. The credits for The Thing, it was a different guy that wrote the screenplay.
Right. Yes.
And John Carpenter wrote the screenplay for this himself.
That's right. Yes,
which,
he did.
Under a pseudonym, Martin Quartermass, which I just looked up what Quartermass was, and I was like, oh, I got to look up some of these movies.
Yeah.
Apparently, like an old BBC serial character, which, like a scientist. I have no idea. I didn't know anything about that. So I'm going to have to look into that. But yeah, I just, it's so funny to me how much this movie just like really bored me. I'm so surprised because like, I mean, even in some of Carpenter's really not great stuff, like as it goes through the late, I mean, he actually has some other good stuff that comes up later. Obviously The Mouth of Madness, Vampires is a good movie. I never saw The Ward. I actually have to see that. I've heard
good
things.
Vampires is a good movie. We're gonna go with that. Oh, okay.
What's that? Vampires is kind of fun, like a fun vampire movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I'll have to. James Woods is in that one, right?
That's right. He is. Yes.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like Prince of Darkness. There's just so much potential there, and I get what you're saying. I mean, he leans a lot on sort of like the visuals of it and like, you know, the things with the bugs and the one scene where the guy's in the parking lot, like, I have a message for you.
Oh,
and
that's so creepy,
you know, and there's, you know, I mean, it's kind of creepy, but it kind of plays out a little too slowly where I'm like, okay, like let's move on. You know, I mean, I get it. You know, I think, you know, it's almost like a version of that scene from The Omen where it's like, Damien, it's all for you, Damien, which played out like so much horrifyingly, you know. But, you know, his head comes off and everyone's like, so that's what I'm saying. Like his head pops off and they see like, look at his chest and there's bugs. At that point, it's like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm out of here. Like, you know what I mean? And at no point is it, I mean, it's insinuated, but I mean, I guess they kind of say it, but at no point does the priest, you know, Donald Pleasance or Pleasance or whatever, does the priest, at no point is anyone ever drawing a hard line like, this is it. We are the last defense, you know, like it ends here. We have to do this. There is no like St. Crispin's Day speech in this movie. There is no like, I am out of here. You know, at one point, even they try to escape. Simon and Simon guy jumps out the window and lands in the alley. And there's like swarms of homeless people. And they're yelling at him, like, come back up to the window. But I'm looking off to the right and there's an alley. There's a fence and you can climb that fence and that alley's clear, buddy. You could have gotten out.
Where would you have gone?
Yeah. Well, he would have run away and gotten the police or something. You know, at no point does anybody say like, let's use a phone and call somebody. At no point do they ever say like the electricity's out. There's none of that. There's no like thought to like what's happening around them. You know what I mean?
I totally agree that. I mean, I'll give you the phone that it's 1987, and if there's not like phone service in the place, there may not.
They have a ton of electricity there, and
they have electricity, but there still may not be a phone.
Nobody says that. Same. You know what I mean? I mean, the dead priest lived there.
Did he?
Yeah, he was babysitting the thing, right?
And I don't think he did.
No, they said that he came to visit
he came to the archdiocese and died at the archdiocese, but he was living there.
Because he had the key to the room. Let them into the... So the priest had to have a phone. He had all those candles. He had to have a phone.
He had a lot of candles. That burn apparently forever. They just burn all the time. I'm going to give them a pass on the phone just because of the 80s and weird shit like that happened. I'm just giving them a pass.
Wait, weird shit like what? They didn't have a phone?
The people didn't have phones.
You could
have electricity in a house and they wouldn't have a phone because you could only have a landline. I'm willing to give it that pass. Okay. I'm just saying.
I mean, I understand that, but you understand my point is that there's no building up of like how serious the situation is. There's no building up of like panic. There's no building up of like, hey, I mean, they say that like this is going to infest the world, but they don't really go into like how, like what's he going to do? Yeah. I mean, is he going to take over the world and it's going to be like a cesspool of like evil and violence? I mean, I guess you just get that understanding by the antimatter sort of thing, but they don't really explore like what's beyond this world of like the homeless surrounding us. I mean, hey, if I can fight my way through a gang of homeless people, like really, is that the best you can throw at me, Satan? Like a bunch of like homeless people, like they have been drinking and are probably malnourished. I could probably get my way through that. I mean, that's just me, you know, saying that. I probably couldn't. I'd get my head bashed in. But, you know, as a moviegoer.
They were supernaturally reinforced. And, you know, they stabbed a guy with a bike. I just want to say they stabbed a guy with a bike.
Yes.
And he kind of sort of let them.
And they did have Alice Cooper leading them, so.
And Alice Cooper is just divinely creepy. I get all that, and I agree that, like, there is no building up. But I chalk that up to just the weird pacing of it and the sort of weird thing that he's trying to do of it kind of creeping up on everyone. In that sort of locked house, people go missing, and they're all like, that guy, I guess he just left.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally true. You know?
And there is a weirdly casual thing with these people. I mean, there's a sequence where the one woman is in bed, and the possessed woman, like, climbs on top of her in bed.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she's remarkably cool about that. Yes. Totally. Like, to the point where you're like, oh, are these two a thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
Real comfortable with this girl climbing on top of her in bed.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to have any complaints.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It is really
at a party.
It is really funny to me because, I mean, you mentioned earlier how they're supposedly sort of all spread apart from each other, you know, but the thing is once things start to go wrong or they realize they never sort of like assemble as a group and are like, we're going to stick together. They still continue to like spread out and do things on their own. You know what I mean? Particularly the two romantic leads, you know, it's like, hey, you figure if like you're really into one another, you would kind of want to keep them, you know, at your side and want to watch out for them. The thing that just drives me crazy is the how casual. I love that you brought that up, that everyone is sort of like, yeah, well, what happened to that guy? Oh, you know, she must have just left, you know. And I mean, like, to be fair, what's that?
They said that like three different characters. They're like, oh, that guy, I guess he just left.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, they do sort of do that. Oh, they just sort of left like after it's been discovered that this is all like sort of like religious hocus pocus. So, right. I mean, you could maybe sort of see, I mean, I don't think that was in every case, but you know, like the radiologist who they kept calling her, the one that carbon dated it for 7 million years, a container that's 7 million. Come on, people. Like really 7 million. Did you have to go back that far? Because it's really funny because they carbon date and they say 7 million years. And then one guy says something about Jesus and he's like, well, this happened 2000 years ago. And I'm like, was it 2,000 or was it 7 million? When did Satan get entrapped? Was it, did he get out and get put back in? Why is he liquid? Why is he a green goo? Nobody explains anything. Like, you know, it would be nice for Satan himself to show up and monologue a bit, you know, like, you
monologue at all. All he said, Father. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true. He has one line, Father. And, you know, and he, oh my God, can we talk about, oh my God. I'm all over the place with this movie because this movie's all over the place. The compact scene. We're seeing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God.
I thought that little mirror would work. I don't know why.
It's so bad. It's like the woman is Satan and she sees a compact that a woman would carry and the mirror is open and she lifts it up looking at it. And at first you're kind of like, what is happening here? And then you get the idea of like, oh, she's trying to pull her dad. Like it finally comes clear. Like, oh, she's yep. trying to pull her dad out of the little tiny mirror. And it just, and it's like, nope, doesn't work. And I'm like ready to laugh. Like, I was just like, really, Satan? You didn't know that the mirror was too small?
Exactly, Father did not realize that mirror was too small. Listen, he's been locked away for 7 million years. What does he know for a mirror?
Oh my God. And you know what's really funny is like towards the end of the movie when you do find out that it's like a mirror universe and she does find a bigger mirror. Like it's really, I'm like, I want to know what that is. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know what's going on in there because, you know, poor Lisa Blount, she gets trapped there and she is probably the most likable character in the whole movie or the Absolutely. One that at least gets the most lines. And, you know, spoilers, you know, at the end of the movie, it's a very sad ending because, and I actually went when she pushed the other character into the mirror that had been possessed by Satan and falls in by accident. I actually found myself like saying out loud, like, oh, like, no, I was like, oh, right. So I actually cared about somebody, you know, and then the ending sort of plays out the way that you mentioned earlier. But I mean, as a whole, I just really, yeah, this is not one of Carpenter's best. I'm going to have to put The Thing in soon and sort of like cleanse the palate or something.
Cleanse the palate. The Thing is much better. This is maybe, it's my third favorite John Carpenter film.
No, it cannot be. Yep. Beyond Starman and The Fog and Christine and Big Trouble in Little China and Assault on Precinct.
Well, it's after Big Trouble in Little China.
Halloween, what's that?
It's after Big Trouble in Little China. I have to see Starman again. I haven't seen Starman in probably years.
Are you telling me, you're telling me that it's The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, and this movie?
I think so.
It can't be, Jay. No, because it's got to be.
Escape from New York. Maybe
what about Halloween? Escape from New York.
I'm a Halloween fan.
Oh, Jay, you're killing me. No, he's got at least five movies that are better than I think Big Trouble in Little China and this movie, in my opinion. I'm just like, wow, that's interesting to me. I mean, is that because, you know, and not I mean, to be insulting in any way, because I mean, I have movies that I love because of when I saw them and the nostalgia factor and things that I love about them, or because of that you honestly think that they're like really better movies than the other movies?
I'd have to see the other movies again because it's in a weird sort of like middle place between favorite and best.
Gotcha.
Like obviously The Thing is a better film. That is very clear to me.
Yes.
That's why I'm sort of like Escape from New York is a pretty good film.
Solid movie.
It's really solid.
Starman is great.
Because I remember loving it, but, you know, I haven't seen it in a while, so I also saw it when the time I'm remembering it from, I was, you know, 15 as well. And
oh,
I like
it's one of my favorites. I have it on, my wife gave it to me on Blu-ray. Like, it's so good, you got to come over and watch it sometime. Right. I love it.
I will put a pin in this discussion, but this is the reason I chose it. It is one of my favorite horror films, and it is an underloved one, in my opinion.
Okay. I mean, you know, that's fine. I mean, I know that I've got movies where people are like, what? Like, what are you talking about? I mean, my favorite movie of all time is the Christopher Reeve Superman. And I know a lot of people are like, what? What's that?
Who are those people? You send them to talk to me.
Well, you know, there's definitely that crowd that's like, Superman 2 is better, and and those Christopher were... Reeve, and I'm like, no, screw you. And then you've always got that guy who's like, you know, something by Godard is better than Superman, which, you know, fine. I mean, I didn't say it's the best movie. I said it's my favorite movie, you know, so that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And this is definitely more that list. This is like my favorite. Like I feel like I could watch. I don't know that I could watch. I could definitely could watch Big Trouble in Little China probably every day. I could definitely watch The Thing every day of my life and be happy. I don't know that I could watch Prince of Darkness every day, but probably once a month.
You know what that would be, Jay? That would be you falling into the mirror universe and hanging out with the father of Satan. Watching this movie every day would kill me. There's no way I could take it. I mean,
I don't think I could do it every day, but like once a month. Just once a month.
I love it. It's so great because, I mean, I honestly, for me, I feel like this is really... I mean, I'm looking at the list and there's Memoirs of an Invisible Man, for God's sake, Escape from L.A., Village, the remake of A Village from the Damned, which is like, oh, my God. I saw that in the theater because Christopher Reeve was in it. And I was just like, oh, no.
After it falls off precipitously.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, I even like, I like They Live better than this. I just think that John Carpenter, I mean, beginning with, and the Elvis TV movie, that's really good. I haven't seen it in a long time. I mean, this guy, I mean, obviously he has a library that has inspired like so many people. So I feel bad trashing John Carpenter on this episode, one episode of John Carpenter movie that we're going to do this month, because I honestly feel like he is a master of horror. I mean, I think he's just fantastic.
So, absolutely. I firmly agree that he is a total master.
But this movie for me also, I mean, anybody who's a fan of Carpenter or a fan of his work knows that after a certain time, like in the late 80s, early 90s, his work wasn't as solid as it used to be, like, let's just say, for whatever reason. You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe he got tired of dealing with the studio system. I have no idea. But this for me signifies this sort of like downward spiral of like where he was going. And it's interesting because I looked up some old reviews, and there's definitely a couple of reviews like, what happened, man? Like, because you were on fire. You were making like really solid horror movies, and then this, you know. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, I get it. But the thing is I mean, there are bits to interest you. So, I mean, I think if you are a Carpenter fan, you have not seen this one, I can't recommend it. I'm sorry. I can't.
I'll recommend it. If you are a Jay Carpenter fan, you should see it if you haven't seen it. If you're a horror fan, you should take a look at it, especially if you're like an 80s horror fan. I think it's worth the couple hours of your time.
Do you know what I think? I think this is a good movie that would be fun to watch with friends. I think because you could sort of have fun with it and not make fun of it or laugh at it or stuff like that, but do what you and I are doing, which is like, wait a minute, what did that guy just say? And, you know, I don't know, maybe, but I feel like this is probably something that would play really well in sort of like a crowded theater with fans or with a group of friends who are of like-minded taste, like horror movies and stuff like that. But I don't know. I just like, I just think it's so boring. I feel like it's very ponderous. I feel like there's a lot of really interesting ideas in there that could be really well explored. And you could even, like, this is the sort of thing that I really could see a Hollywood executive watching this movie and being like, let's make a series out of this. Like, I feel like you could take this and you could expand that world and just blow it up and just make it into something like really, there's so many good ideas that could be so fully examined that, you know, I feel like a Netflix series, like, hey, John Carpenter, if you're out there listening, which I know you're probably not, or anybody that knows John Carpenter, go back, revisit this concept and make like a series about like the oncoming apocalypse, and then make your second season, which it sounds like Stranger Things is doing, make the second season the coming of the apocalypse. You know, I mean, that to me would be gold. Like, I will say this, that I feel like this is full of a lot of interesting ideas, a lot of very sort of like pulpy comic book, like golden age sci-fi horror ideas. So if you're into that, you might find this interesting. But this as a film doesn't hold together, and it to me is very ponderous, but But man, you know, that's a good idea. I think I just came up with a good idea. Somebody make Prince of Darkness the series. There you go.
I would be fully involved in that.
You do it. You do it. Write the pilot. Get it to John Carpenter right now.
I'll start phone calls.
That's fine. Any last thoughts on this movie, Jay, or on Prince of Dark? John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
John Carpenter. Let's be clear. No more
ownership.
I think we've covered it. And like I said, I it does not have the Christian stamp of approval, but it definitely has mine. Take a look at it. Have a little drink. Enjoy it. And just
you're going to need a drink to watch this one.
Just with it.
No, I mean, that's the thing is if it has your stamp of approval and you see something in it, I mean, we may not always agree, but I feel like that you are a gentleman of discerning tastes and you and I agree a lot on other stuff. So there must be something in it that is good or a kernel of goodness in it, just like everything. Everything has a kernel of goodness, unless we're talking about our president. I feel like there's just so much. There's like at least five other movies in Carpenter's what's the term?
Oeuvre.
Yes, I'm the ugly American. but that you could spend your time with, and this would sort of be at the bottom of my list. So that is my final thought on. Prince of Darkness. But I did have the one good thing is that I had a lot of fun talking about it with you because.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. We have been discussing John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, a 1987 movie, obviously directed and written by John Carpenter. My name is Christian Horn, and I have been on the line with Jay Holtham. And Hello? We are going to be trying to do a new horror movie every week. So hopefully we will be back next week with another episode. And there's also this little movie called Blade Runner that's coming out, I think, soon. And hopefully we can get a chance to gather everyone together for that. But,
that'd be great.
but thank you always for listening. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and just tune in soon for another episode of Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-time fanboy.